Welcome to the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast. I'm Aaron Goodman, host and founder of the podcast. I'm a journalist, documentary maker, university instructor, and communication studies researcher, and I've lived with multiple chemical sensitivity, or MCS, for years. MCS is also known as environmental illness, chemical intolerance, and toxic-induced loss of tolerance, or TILT, and it affects millions of people around the world. Many people with the condition are dismissed by healthcare workers, employers, friends, even family. Countless people with MCS struggle to find healthy housing and get accommodation at work and school, and we suffer in all kinds of ways. The purpose of the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast is to help raise awareness about MCS and what it's like for people who live with it. We featured interviews with some of the world's leading experts and researchers on MCS, and lots of people with the condition, and we're just getting started. I'm really grateful to listeners who support the podcast. If you'd like to make a monthly contribution or a one-time donation, please find links on the website, chemicalsensitivitypodcast.org. Your support will help us continue making the podcast available and creating greater awareness about MCS. Thanks so much. The podcast belongs to the community, and the purpose is to advocate for all of us, and your help means a lot. You're listening to episode 38. It's called Chemical-Free Homes, and it features a conversation with Corinne Segura. Corinne's a building biologist practitioner and founder of My Chemical-Free House, where she tests and writes about green building materials. Corinne is also a guest contributor at Green Building Advisor and a course creator for the Building Biology Institute. She has 8 years of experience as a green materials specifier for new builds and renovations, often working with highly chemically sensitive clients. In our conversation, you'll hear Corinne talk about why she started My Chemical Free House, some of the greatest challenges people face when renovating, and if it's possible to create a safe space in a contaminated home, and much more. I hope you get a lot out of the conversation and the episode. Find us on social media. Just search for the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast or Podcasting MCS. Leave your comments about anything you hear on the podcast, and please share the podcast with others. You can find the podcast on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast and hit subscribe. You can read captions in any language you like. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to help others learn about the podcast. And if there's someone you'd like to hear interviewed on the podcast or a topic you'd like us to explore, just let us know. Email info@chemicalsensitivitypodcast.org. And thanks for listening. Okay, Corinne, there's a lot that I'd like to ask you about your work and your website. Is there anything you'd like to start with by letting listeners know about you?
Yeah, I really started with my Chemical Free House website, and it started as materials information for new builds and renos for people with chemical sensitivities. It's branched out more from materials to cleaning products and even some topics that, there's more and more people that are not sensitive that read it now, but it still always needs to make sense to people who are sensitive as kind of the primary and as well as the general public. From there, I've also written for Green Building Advisor. I've made a course for Building Biology Institute and a few other things like that.
The main purpose of the website is for folks who are looking to renovate, build. And so is that why most folks are going to the website?
Yeah, usually they're choosing a material like a flooring material. Some of it's just furniture, some of it's not building or renovating, but the core of the site, that's how it started, is with building and renovating for chemical sensitivities.
Why is that something you wanted to do?
Well, I was building a tiny house on wheels, and the only information out there was the book by Paula Baker Laporte. And there was just a couple other little things, but nothing really online, hardly anything online. And I just thought this should really be online. I'm just someone that likes to organize information. Paula just came out with a new version of her book, and my website's really quite different from her book now. The overlap is probably only 10 or 20%, but just in general, that topic wasn't online, and that I just thought this needs to be accessible. I want to share what I'm learning from my tiny house, all the testing of materials that I was doing, and documenting that a bit. So it did, the very, very beginning was mostly about my tiny house, but of course it's expanded from there.
Can you bring us back to the time when you were building or renovating? I'm not sure, the tiny house. Can you talk a little bit about what led you to do that? Was it MCS? And what was happening in your life at that time that prompted you to start a building or renovating a tiny house?
Yeah, it was a new build. I was very mold sensitive and very chemically sensitive. Right around the time I moved in was really the peak of my chemical sensitivities, and it was quite extreme. So I thought this was a, you know what, I had a lot of brain fog at this time, to be honest. And I just thought this, like, I can't say that there was an exact plan, but I just thought that this would be a better way to control my environment. I thought I had chosen a good builder based on a recommendation from someone I trusted, and I was choosing all the materials myself. So it turned out not to be a good builder in terms of like mold prevention on that side, but I didn't know anything about that. I didn't know enough to even know to look for that. I didn't know enough to supervise. I was just choosing materials thinking this, you know, I just hoping this would work out really.
And how did it go?
So it didn't go well on the building front. I do think I did a good job of choosing materials. There was definitely things I would do differently. I think at that time, well, there were fewer options, and there were also a lot of options that were actually quite experimental. And I didn't, never having built before, I didn't really realize kind of the pros and cons of like, what happens if this material doesn't actually function as it's supposed to? But I did tolerate the house well at first. So I did well in it at first. But then there were errors that were made by the builder, and so it didn't really hold up with time. So, I mean, overall, it was a kind of a big mistake.
Well, how many years ago was that now, if I may ask?
Over 10, a bit over 10.
So if we fast forward to now, if, you know, imagine people reach out to you, and it'd be interesting to know what are some of the common questions people have when they contact you, or on the website, what are some of the most popular or common things people are looking up. But if people reach out to you now and say, like, I'm really struggling, I can't manage to be in an indoor environment, would you recommend people to look at tiny houses or RVs or that nature?
I still like tiny houses in general. If you can build it properly, like, I don't think you should build anything if you don't have the knowledge to choose a good builder who's mold preventative and to supervise even, maybe not every day, all day, but to have some kind of supervision over what's going on, or pay someone to do that, which is usually the very expensive option, but it is an option. So I do still like tiny houses. There's actually an article on the website about a passive house tiny house, and it goes into great detail on like mold prevention, all like the mold prevention details on building a tiny house. I would do it again if I was in a city where, you know, I could park it, and I think I like it. I still like the idea. So I wouldn't deter people from building a tiny house necessarily. In terms of the most popular questions, it's definitely not about tiny houses anymore, but flooring is the most popular topic. I guess because, you know, you don't even have to be doing a major renovation. You could just be redoing your flooring, or it could be a renovation or a new build. And flooring has a lot of flooring options out there. And it's kind of confusing area. It's also something that's obviously very important for design. So it's something people are really interested in making sure they get the right kind of flooring. And so a lot of consultations were about that as well. Going over the pros and cons, really, because it's like, you know, we got price, we've got design, we've got off gassing, we've got non-VOC chemicals, like, you know, plasticizers, metals. So there's a lot to, there's a lot that just goes into flooring.
Yeah. So there's flooring. It's so complicated, but everything is so complicated. So in a wider sense, you mentioned there at the time you started the website, there wasn't a ton of information. There's some authors who write about this, but is it your sense that today that there still isn't a ton of information out there? And because obviously your website provides a really valuable service, a wonderful source of information for people. Is it because there's not a lot of info out there?
Yeah, there's not a lot of other websites that are covering building for the chemically sensitive. There's definitely a lot that goes into it. Like it's, I get fluorine samples almost every week because I need to see the latest fluorine. I need to see it in person because websites are just so vague sometimes. Like you can't even tell that even what category of fluorine this is. It's so vague. So just keeping up. And then there's changes to the fluorine. You know, maybe I've already got it. It's not necessarily new. It's already on my website, but they've made a change. It's lower VOC. They've removed PFAs, the stain guard treatments. And just keeping up with it is a lot of work. So there's, I think my website covers almost all parts of the build now. And it's expanding into, you know, more detailed areas. And I'm starting to make videos because I think there are not enough videos on the topic. And for some people, videos are better. I actually find probably most people prefer reading, but there are people that, of course, prefer videos. And in videos, I can kind of show the products too, so that can be helpful. So I think there's still, in terms of what's missing, it might be information over video.
And so you mentioned flooring. That's on a lot of people's minds. I think you released a list of non-toxic or safer couches for 2023, which I bookmarked and I'm going to go back to. So furniture, I imagine renovating. How about, are those big on people's lists when they go to reach out to you? And how about fixing spaces that are affected by chemicals that people are trying to make manageable? Is that, are those big ones also?
Yeah, sofa and rugs are very popular on the website. Not as many people contact me for when I was doing private consultation on those topics because, you know, maybe it's easier for people to choose on their own. I would say over consultations, mattresses are more important because mattresses for chemically sensitive people are tricky because you can take the most natural materials, cotton, wool, natural latex. Those can easily be triggers for chemically sensitive folks. So there's no clear answer on mattresses. So people like to talk through. I think whenever there's a lot of pros and cons and not like a clear answer and it needs to be very individualized, that's what people would come to me for. So even though sofas is certainly a popular topic to read about, people would come more for like mattresses for that individualized, okay, well, I don't do well with this, but I do well with that. So like, what do you think material I should try next? And, you know, mattresses sometimes, you know, it's a pretty expensive purchase too.
Right. So you mentioned consultations. And so that's part of the work that you do, right? I gather, right? Where you provide a service?
Not right now. I haven't been doing consultations for a little while. I might be back in the new year. No, these are just some examples from the past.
And how about when people want to make a safe space in a home that is contaminated? Is that something people look to the website for?
Unfortunately, I would say almost half. So not everyone that came to me was chemically sensitive, but out of the chemically sensitive people, I would say half were trying to remediate some kind of problem that went wrong during a renovation, usually, or, you know, some kind of redecoration. So some kind of paint was applied. Often the person chose the paint, but maybe not the primer, overlooked the primer, maybe some caulking, some new fluorine is off gassing. And sometimes again, like they chose the fluorine, but they didn't choose the glue or the underlayment, and the contractor just came in with whatever they thought was the norm. Contractors generally don't have any idea about VOC levels or which ones are best. And, you know, that makes sense because the companies are so vague about these things. Like, how would they know? So unfortunately, yeah, there was a lot of remediation, and I would recommend going to, you know, doing a consultation before, even not with me because I'm not doing it right now, but because these kinds of problems are really, really costly. Once we've got a flooring in there, that's a problem. Or even, you know, something glued down, and someone just commented on my blog now, the glue needs to be scraped out. It's just so much more stressful. And for many people, even just leaving their house is difficult. You know, finding a place to go, a hotel or where to go is difficult. So yeah, unfortunately, these problems are best avoided in the first place. But yeah, I do. And with the remediation, it's also really hard if I'm not there, because a lot of the time someone doesn't know which product is the culprit. If they weren't there during the renovation, a lot of times they're not actually even sure which product is off-gassing. So yeah, it gets really tricky.
It sounds really overwhelming. Like, if I were to imagine renovating or buying a new home, it can be really overwhelming.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's probably the best we can do. I would advise getting, like, let's say you have a laminate flooring you like, I would advise getting at least 5 samples of the same flooring or in different colors, even if it's not the color you want, because you need to hopefully get one that's newer. And there's no guarantee that you order one in the color you want and it's going to be brand new. So the more you get, I usually get 5, you could get more. And then also you also have a bigger, like, let's say they all smell like formaldehyde and they all smell pretty new. You now have a bigger area of the product. So some people like will sleep beside it. Some people will do like some kind of intuitive testing, you know, smell it. You could put it in a jar depending on the size of the thing, so that you can try and, you know, close the jar and try and isolate, like let that VOC build up a little bit and then sniff it. So it was a really difficult process for me because I was so sensitive and these things were hurting me at the time. So yes, this can be a difficult process.
Just pausing to say thanks for listening to the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast. You're listening to episode 38. It's called Chemical Free Homes. It features a conversation with Karin Segura, founder of My Chemical Free House. I hope you get a lot out of the conversation and this episode. Please subscribe where you get your podcasts. If you'd like to support the podcast, please find links on the website, chemicalsensitivitypodcast.org. Your support will help us continue making the podcast available and creating greater awareness about MCS. Thank you very much. Can we take a step back and, you know, I've read on your website that you've done an enormous amount of training and education in this field. Do you want to walk me through some of that? And is this a field that you always saw yourself going in, or was it sparked when you developed MCS?
I've taken as many courses as I can that are related to the topic, because there is no course in what I do. Like, there's no course that's like, here are all the flooring and insulation products and caulking, and here are their VOC levels, and here are which ones have phthalates, and like, there is no course exactly on this. So I've taken construction courses, I've taken building science, I've taken materials safety, and just kind of everything around it that I'm still right now I'm being in the process of being certified as a home inspector.
Do you think there's greater awareness in the wider population about the hazards of building materials?
I think more and more people who don't have MCS or don't have asthma or don't have an environmental illness are getting interested in cleaner, greener, safer materials. Definitely, I would guess that half of the readers are not environmentally, don't have environmental illness. That's just based on the comments and and what I'm seeing, but probably most of those are mothers who are concerned about what they're bringing into the house. There's just been so many chemicals now that we're looking back to the very recent past and being like, oh yeah, we shouldn't have put lead in the paint, like in the wall paint. In so many toys had lead and still have lead. And there's a loss of trust in the regulatory bodies of like, there's still so much lead in things. There's still so much PFAs, which is the forever chemicals, the stain guard chemicals. Those are being phased out, but we're going to look back, like those are going to be phased out probably by 2030. And we're going to look back and be like, whoops. But there's people now that are like, we want to avoid those now, not when we've, you know, not with this regulatory delay with catching everything. So yeah, there's a lot of interest in avoiding some of these big chemicals of concern.
Do you think there are more chemical products or building products that are available now because of this awareness? So do we have more options now that we didn't have before?
Yeah, there's definitely way more options. Like zero VOC carpet didn't even exist until a few years ago, apart from like the most natural wool ones, but like a zero VOC, just regular synthetic carpet didn't exist. That's just one example. We've improved a ton with formaldehyde in laminates, especially because those usually contain a lot, but any flooring that has it as a fiberboard core, and as well as like engineered products like plywood, even we've improved the formaldehyde levels. There's just so many things that, and there's more options. So like there's now, like you can have a formaldehyde free laminate floor, or you can have a Green Guard Gold certified, so it's lower in formaldehyde, or you can just have the standard. Like there's a lot of options. There are alternatives to vinyl plank, because vinyl plank is probably the most popular flooring just in general, for just in the general population. So now there are non-PVC options that are still waterproof. So there's so many more options. I mean, that's almost just talking about flooring, but even with sofas, like a few years ago, there was like, you know, one or two companies you could choose from. And now there's like 10, let's just say, as an example.
How helpful can an air purifier be in allowing someone with MCS to be in a space?
If you're reacting, if you had a whole basement of flooring, and I'm assuming it's kind of a fairly large standard size house, and maybe even the glue had VOCs, and if the laminate standard with formaldehyde, that can't be, and you're sensitive to it, that can't be remedied. Like you can improve on the air quality, but that wouldn't be enough for a sensitive person. I would say if, like, let's say the flooring was 5 years old, and it was just slightly not great, like you were almost able to be feeling good in the room, then maybe an air purifier, because it just helps a bit. So if it's just a bit off, there, you know, that's the consensus, I would say. There are people that own like 8 air purifiers and like they need it to survive. So that's fine too. You know, if you can do it, do it. But in general, the consensus is like, it helps a bit, a little bit.
I find a lot of time people ask me about if I know about how to build a safe space within a home that where there've been a lot of chemicals used. I don't know. Is that something you have any info about, or you may be willing to talk about?
Yeah, there's so many different levels though. So it just depends on, and it also depends if the house is moldy, I wouldn't try and create a safe room. It just doesn't work so well with mold. Even sleeping on the balcony of moldy places, which I've done many, many, many times, isn't good enough. Like the mold is just, it just moves around in a way that's difficult to control. If there's some off-gassing, I mean, you could do everything from kind of, there's so many things you could do, but like you could remove the drywall and the flooring and actually like rebuild that room, which some people do, but it's also, you know, a lot of people don't take that option because then there's the risk of all the new materials and not knowing for sure. I would say the first thing to do is actually create air exchange if you can. I just fairly recently posted a blog post on using an ERV, which is an air exchanger that moderates the temperature and humidity a little. So it's not just opening the window, which is another strategy that I like, but this is a lot more air exchange than just opening a window without, you know, getting too cold or getting too, you know, throwing the humidity off too much. So air exchange is more effective than an air purifier. It's more effective than anything that you could do like within a day. So I posted one that you could actually mount to a window, to some windows that we'll work with. And it was, and so because they usually have to be like installed within the ceiling or something. So this is one option. You can also use positive pressure. So for example, most people know the IQ Air air purifier, which is quite a good air purifier. And you can actually use, and usually it just circulates the air in the room, right? Like air goes in, air comes out within the room, but you can actually use a hose and bring in air from the outside as the intake. And now you've got more air coming into the room than can leave. So in a way, so you've got like positive, it's called positive pressure. So unless you have an exhaust fan running, you actually have more, you have air like pressing out, and that can help if there's a contaminant in the rest of the house. You can control that by, you can even use like a zipper door, like a containment door on your door, and you'll see that bowing outwards. So you can see that there's, once you open the door, you won't necessarily have air rushing in because you've got that air bowing, you've got that air pushing out.
You talked about flooring. Are there any other kinds of products that are still really hard to find that are safer?
Mattresses is definitely a tricky one, but I don't know what the material is that it should be, you know, because of a foam mattress, a mattress that has at least some foam is very comfortable. And there's no foam that's perfect right now. So maybe there could be some innovation there in the future, but I don't think we have like the product yet. What else in flooring? I think there's lots of great options in flooring. We're on the cusp of creating stain guard treatments that are not forever chemicals. We sort of have it, but they don't quite work as well. So I'm sure we're going to see more innovation there. We're definitely going to see more innovation because U.S. states are legislating, you know, a ban of PFAS within the next few years. So we're going to see innovation there for sure. Paint. I mean, we've seen a lot of innovation with paint, with almost all the brands now having a zero VOC line. And there's some non-acrylic paints that are even better, like Kiem. Actually, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but K-I-E-M, mineral paint, using a mineral binder instead of an acrylic binder. And that's come from Germany. So I don't know, maybe it's been in Germany for a while, but it's pretty new here. So those are some areas.
Do you think that part of your work helps to destigmatize multiple chemical sensitivity?
I think that the website being popular amongst, you know, maybe about 50% of non-sensitive people helps us. And even the pressure that non-sensitive people are putting on companies to improve their products is certainly helping us because we're a fairly small group and not a very organized one because we're suffering and like can't always focus and can't always put the energy towards this. So there's definitely, I see a lot of like non-sensitive people pushing towards, you know, regulate, like let's say in removing lead from items. They also, I'm sure there's a lot of people who read the website and because I always mention a line about sensitive people, they've sort of learned about that just by accident because they're looking for healthier products and they're like, oh, so sensitive people don't do well with this. So I'm sure there's been some education there, and kind of, I think blending the two groups together is a help in general with destigmatizing and getting our voices out there more.
That brings us to the end of this episode of the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast. Thank you very much to Corinne Segura for speaking with me. We release new episodes twice a month. Please subscribe where you get your podcasts. The podcast is produced by me, Aaron Goodman, with assistance from Casey Wallstra. I'm grateful to listeners who support the podcast. If you'd like to make a monthly contribution or a one-time donation, please find links on the website, chemicalsensitivitypodcast.org. Your support will help us continue making the podcast available and creating greater awareness about MCS. Thanks so much. The podcast belongs to the community, and the purpose is to advocate for all of us. Your help means a lot. You can find us on social media. Search for the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast or Podcasting MCS. Please leave your comments about anything you hear. We love hearing from you. Find the podcast on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast. Hit subscribe, and you can read captions in any language you like. Please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to help others learn about the podcast. And if there's someone you'd like to hear interviewed on the podcast or a topic you'd like us to explore, just let us know. Email info@chemicalsensitivitypodcast.org. Thanks so much.